Welcome. This is To Live and Law in LA, a Nixon Peabody podcast. According to TechCrunch, last year, female founders received only 2% of the venture capital for their startups. And 1/4 of the businesses in California had 0 women on their boards. But California has just passed a new law aimed at changing those statistics. This new law mandates that every publicly traded company must have at least 1 woman on the board by 2019. It's the first law of its kind in the United States, and it could lead to a change in the gender gap. So today we sit down with Mickey Reynolds and Megan Setti, pro bono clients of ours who have helped many women go into business for themselves. Mickey and Megan are founding members of Grid 110, the first startup accelerator in downtown Los Angeles. Grid 110 is a nonprofit free resource for entrepreneurs, and it has created an entire entrepreneurship community downtown. Even before this new law, Grid 110 had over 50% representation for women founders and startups supported by their program, and equal representation on their own board as well. Today, we discuss this new law and what you might need to start your own business, regardless of your gender. Enjoy the episode. Welcome. This is To Live and Law in LA. I'm Jay Turner Bond, a public finance attorney here at Nixon Peabody.
And I'm Shannon Egan, also a public finance attorney here at Nixon Peabody.
And we have two very special guests. First is Megan Setti. She is the co-founder and board member of Grid 110, also the founder of M Collaborative and co-founder of the Heart Series.
Hi.
Welcome, Megan.
Thanks, guys.
And we also have Mickey Reynolds, who's the executive director at Grid 110, also a founding member. She has also managed digital projects at MGM and 20th Century Fox. She was also named LA Business Journal's 2017 Woman of Influence and Tech Week's 2017 Tech 100.
Hi there.
Welcome, Mickey. Welcome.
Thanks for having us.
And we also have one other Grid 110 member in the house.
That's
our
right.
Newest board member,
Jade Turner.
Hello.
So we brought you here just to talk a little bit about Grid 110. Can you guys tell us a little bit about how that got started?
And what it is, too.
So Grid 110 is a community and economic development nonprofit that we co-founded about 4 years ago. We run accelerator-style programs for early-stage startup founders.
And so what do you mean by kind of accelerator programs?
Yeah, so we're working with 2 different programs currently. We're working with 22 companies across the 2 different programs. So we have a very early-stage program called Idea to Prototype. And it's great for first-time founders. We work through a bunch of different things, whether it's putting together a pitch deck and refining that pitch, really honing in on the problem that you're trying to solve. How big is that problem? What does the market look like? And so just kind of the fundamentals and foundational knowledge that you need from like an entrepreneurship 101 aspect that if you were going through business school or if you took an entrepreneurship class in school, you'd be equipped with those tools. But most people have come of age where that wasn't an option for them. And so being able to have that opportunity, but also the connection to community. And so because entrepreneurship is such a lonely path that you go through just by yourself, if you don't have that existing network, which a lot of the founders that we work with don't, they're a first-time founder. This is not something that they've come from in terms of family or friends. Maybe they're underrepresented minorities, so they don't know a lot of people that look like them. They're doing what they're trying to do. And so having access to that, having access to other people that can share the gripes. And then we have a later stage program that we're working with currently 7 companies, and it's called the Residency Program. Some of them are looking to go out and fundraise and get capital. Some of them are looking to refine different parts of their product or their operations. And so we kind of leave it up to the companies to set what those expectations are in terms of what they're trying to get out of the program and see if we can help them meet those.
And so Silicon Beach is known as a pretty big startup area in the LA area. So what need did you guys see for Grid 110? Why did you guys decide to start another accelerator?
Yeah, I mean, we started it out of a natural need just for the fact that of the 7 co-founders, 6 of us were entrepreneurs.
Oh, wow.
And we realized there just wasn't any real connective tissue for entrepreneurs in downtown as we started having conversations to talk through like problems and challenges we were facing, different initiatives that we could take to help entrepreneurs in downtown and sort of start what could be the beginning stages of something similar to a Silicon Beach, but in our own backyard, because we all lived, played, or worked in downtown.
Yeah, and the similar thread that I think that brought us all together originally was that we all felt that we had a shared vision for downtown LA being the next tech hub. Mm-hmm. And as it's gone through this revitalization mm-hmm. and resurgence of industry and culture and entertainment and become really a destination in the past 5 years or so, That we felt that just like San Francisco and New York are the, you know, the epicenters of their kind of tech industries, downtown could be the very same thing if we could figure out the problems to solve and how to kind of cultivate and curate that sense of community and support.
So you had mentioned you know, women and underrepresented groups, right, in your cohorts. And I know you guys don't have necessarily like a quota requirement, right? But what are some of the demographics for the people that are in your cohort?
Yeah, so we've worked with 82 companies now over the past 4 years of programming. About 65% of those companies have a female founder or co-founder, and 55% have a founder of color.
Wow.
And I know the startup community in Silicon Valley in particular has had some issues with diversity notoriously. And it seems like you guys really aren't experiencing those same, you know, inequities maybe that we're seeing in Silicon Valley. And I know that this is also true for your guys' board, which seems pretty reflective of, you know, those mm-hmm. who are participating mm-hmm. in your program too. You guys have a pretty diverse board. Can you guys, you know, speak about whether or not that was kind of an organic?
We can kind of credit LA. I mean, yeah. Mickey has a great statistic.
We recently learned from the mayor's office. So they just announced this Pledge LA initiative. That's an initiative between the mayor's office, the Annenberg Foundation, a family foundation here, and the VC community, and pledging to be more equitable in terms of diversity and inclusion with who the investment community is investing in, the types of companies, who the companies are hiring themselves, and not necessarily to do any kind of diversity quota, but to be responsible for reporting that they are going to be mindful of this. And so one of the statistics that they gave was that 73% of Angelenos identify as a person of color. And that is not necessarily representative of the tech community that's here. And so it's the strive to make the tech community and the ecosystem look more like the city that it represents.
Yeah. So, I mean, with a statistic like that, if you have 73% of people in Los Angeles identifying as a person of color, you're naturally going to see more diversity among your boards and your companies and your founders.
That's true. And yet people still find a way for boards to be made up with predominantly white males. I know according to the Washington Post, the United States is made up of 31% Caucasian males, yet they make up 91% of the Fortune 500 CEOs. There are more CEOs in the S&P 500 companies named John than there are women altogether.
And I think this discrepancy is particularly pronounced in the tech and startup community. I know according to TechCrunch, only about 2% of the funding received from venture capitalists goes to women. So, yeah, it's particularly bad in that community. Recently, the California legislature, I know, passed some legislation requiring that at least one member of each board for California headquartered publicly traded companies be female. And a lot of companies are not meeting this quota, if you will, naturally. So California legislature, you know, took steps to implement that.
Right.
So this law hasn't gone without its challenges. More than 30 business groups, including the California Chamber of Commerce, oppose the law because it could be seen as unconstitutional.
And of course, you're going to have the argument that this law will allow unqualified women to be promoted. But Norway has proven this wrong. They had a quota of 40% women on the board since 2008, and the women on their boards were more educated and more qualified than before the quota was set up. And since they've had this quota, their GDP has almost doubled.
And there are some concerns, even from those who support advancing women in leadership roles in California, who say that, you know, putting women on the board of directors may deplete the supply of qualified, talented women to serve maybe in leadership positions in the companies and other capacities, for example, as officers, you know, high-level C-suite officers. But that really isn't true from what history has told us and just performance in the past. You know, access to board seats often creates more opportunities for women in leadership roles within the company and the C-suite and other, you know, senior level officer positions.
Right, right. I mean, I think the question kind of becomes, are quotas good?
Right.
Right. Many have suggested that there are better ways to go about this, you know, setting goals, having outside pressure from investors. But goals haven't worked in the past. I know there was a senator, Hannah Beth Jackson, who co-signed the bill before this bill was signed, sponsored a non-binding resolution in 2013 urging each public company to increase the number of women on its boards by 2017. Of course, what is the result? Less than 20% of them have followed that recommendation.
That's right. And it's not that there's lack of qualified women for these jobs either. You know, at entry-level positions, like, for example, at law firms, you know, there are plenty of qualified female applicants. And at the entry-level positions, there's more female associates than there are their male counterparts. But we're just not seeing this reflected in leadership, partnership, or high-level positions.
And now we need to get women in the leadership positions so that they can then get onto those boards and take those roles.
And I was reading an article recently that said a lot of the CEOs are now being picked from boards. So, right. I mean, if we have more women on boards, then naturally, if that's who the company's looking to then maybe, you know, pick them as CEO, this is great, you know?
And these female-led companies, generally speaking, I think, are performing better than those companies that don't have any female leadership. Right. And it's not surprising, right? It's representative of, you know, the population at large. Most purchasing power, I think, comes from women in America. So I think it makes sense, you know, from an economic standpoint and from a leadership and, you know, talent pool.
So, you know, I kind of want to give the audience a flavor for what you guys do for the ITP program. I mean, you know, we wouldn't be in the residency program. Shannon nor I would be in the residency program. I think it's pretty clear. But, you know, maybe we could apply to be in the I2P program.
Sure, let's do it.
Sure, give us your pitch, Jane.
We're going to need a lot of work.
That's right. But we've got some ideas.
Well, since this is Jade's idea, why don't you kick us
off? Oh, Shannon. Oh, my God. She's really stepping into this mid-level associate position. Okay, so I have this idea. It kind of started because when I moved to LA, I got a subscription box it was a monthly candy shipment. Mm. And at that point, I had then completely changed my life and decided to become more healthy. So I actually got rid of that membership. But I was reading this book called How Not to Die. It's kind of the first couple chapters were like, how not to die of colon cancer, how not to die of breast cancer, right? And so are these little tips of things that you could be doing, like maybe eating freeze-dried strawberries for not getting breast cancer, right? And so I came up with this idea that I wanted to have a subscription box for women, or just like it's like a healthy subscription box where
a how not to die subscription box.
Yeah, we haven't came out with a name yet.
No, how not to die girl. It's for women.
That's right. Hashtag how not to die.
How not to die box is in the mail.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it'd have like different like little fun things, fun facts, but it also would have like food and maybe coupons. And how would I get that business started?
So is this something that you personally would subscribe to?
Yes.
Have you talked to other people about the concept and does it resonate with them?
I've talked to, I have talked to family members about it, and my mom was super excited about it, but I feel like...
As moms are.
Right. I don't know for sure the demographic for this. Like, okay. I don't know if it's going to be people my age, you know,
me.
I don't know if 25-year-olds like me are going to be interested in it. Okay. To answer your question.
Yes, so it does. And then what do you identify as the problem that you're trying to solve with this? What's the need?
Like when I was trying to actually create this for myself, it was a little bit of an arduous task because I was going to Trader Joe's, right? I was going to Sprouts and I was kind of picking up these macadamia nuts and I was picking up Brazil nuts and I was picking up freeze-dried strawberries, and the grocery list became longer and longer, right? And it's kind of like, I don't really want to do that. I wish someone would just ship me what I would need, but we try to form a habit and an easy place to get all of it.
So a curated, healthy snack box delivered straight to your door.
Exactly. That cures you.
Keeps you alive.
Where do I sign up?
Thank you.
Validation. I mean, I think that's the first step I always tell people is if they're, you know, hovering around an idea for something, start talking to people about it and start kind of trying to figure out, is there an audience for this? And even if you don't know what that age demographic would be, like,
right.
Talk to five people in their 20s, talk to five people in their 30s, see if this is something that would resonate with them. See if they're already subscribing to something right now, so that maybe they're more inclined to actually get some type of subscription, that they realize that the importance of a subscription product, and start to really hone in on who that potential customer might be. It's all in like
advice.
The research stage.
Market research.
Yeah, that advice because I feel like I always have brilliant ideas and then I pitch them to my friends who are exactly like me, like same demographics, right? Like young women, you know, professionals. And I'm like, it's a great idea. And they're like, this is a great idea. And then I tell my husband and he's like, I don't get it. So I think, multiple ages is probably, and demographics, I think that's great advice. Yeah.
So I think it's the customer discovery process, right?
And what if they love it? I do that and they're like,
which
yeah,
they will.
Jade, nailed
then
it.
You want to test it. Like maybe you offer them like a hand done.
And I just use my own money to do this.
Yeah. Yes. But then you're like, I'm going to charge you. You're going to Venmo me, every month for this. And like, let's see how this goes. And do you like the assortment that I'm giving you? And then make sure that you're getting feedback from them. And how can I change this? And how can I improve the process? So it could be something that you start right here in your firm.
Start like a group of people.
Oh, I actually love it. Doing that. It's like little gift boxes, right? And then you can kind of refine what the packaging is or what the assortment is and how people are.
Right. And then, I mean, you just, like, there are companies out there that provide boxes, right, and packaging. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the whole idea seems so foreign to me. But this is, wow, that's very
interesting. It's doable. Yeah, you make it sound doable.
You make it sound easy.
Well, it's all about breaking it down into those like measurable steps for progress. And like, okay, how do I take this like daunting idea and make it something I can actually like take little micro steps towards?
And so could I then, so I could get people at my job or neighbors, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But do I ever go to farmer's market?
I mean, you could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
We actually work with a company who did that for farmers market.
The boxes?
Yeah. She would kind of take down your dietary restrictions for people that like to go to the farmers market but never can find the time to do it themselves. So wouldn't you like to have a personal shopper do that for you? And so she puts together based off of your restrictions, your likes, the things that are seasonal and recommendations, maybe things that you would never try before and are like it's outside of your wheelhouse of what is that weird looking vegetable or fruit. And she puts together kind of curated farmers markets, like baskets for people, and goes and does them themselves and goes to multiple to find the right assortment for her customers.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's really cool. Okay, Shannon, your turn.
All right, I'm up. I'm nervous. Okay, so I'm, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I'm from the Detroit area. And as most people know, and I think associate with Detroit, there's a huge urban blight issue. And so I'd like to, because my personal interest is I love carpentry and building furniture. So I'd like to take some of the discarded and kind of dilapidated discard, I guess, from Detroit and refurbish it and turn it into furniture. And I'd like to resell in the Detroit community just to, you know, taking things out of the community, I'd like to put it back in, ideally. But yeah, that's my idea. That's it. Not quite as formed as Jade's.
Right, but more beautiful.
That's okay. Our program gets people at all different stages of company applying. So
I'm already ready to like buy Jade's box. I need to catch up.
Well, I like the sustainability component of that. And it's and that's you know, kind of in Meg's wheelhouse, too, of being able to take something.
Oh, social impact.
Yeah. Do you have a background in this?
I just personal, like, building.
But you built things. Yeah.
I've built them, and I've sold, like, tables and things like that.
What
but
have
nothing
you built?
Elaborate. I've built bookshelves, coffee tables, side tables, and kitchen tables.
You're skilled in this area of labor.
Thank you.
Yourself a carpenter. Yeah.
You're in good company. Jesus was a carpenter.
The OG.
That's where I was going.
Great minds.
I mean, it's definitely interesting. I mean, from putting on my like LA hat of like, you could totally do that here.
That's so true. And it has a similar issue, like downtown LA.
Yeah.
Kind of has a similar, I guess, like association where it's a, you have this thought when you think of downtown LA as kind of sprawling and abandoned to some extent. And you think of the homelessness issue. And I think, you know, bringing the community back. And I think part of it not only is dealing with, you know, the discarded materials, but it's also, you know, this revamp of the identity, which I think you guys have really been a part
that's
of.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Shannon.
Oh,
yeah,
Jade.
That's beautiful. No, seriously, it is. Come on.
You're going to make me blush.
And you could totally be lawyer by day / carpenter by
night.
That's
my dream.
That's right.
It's possible. Why? You got to just start small.
And I think that the fact that it is so regional focused and it's about repurposing and breathing new life into something that was old. And I love products that have stories behind them. And I think that that kind of thing definitely does. So just from a personal, like, ooh, I like that. That when I first heard that, that was my thought.
Aww, yeah, mine too.
Makes me feel good. Thanks, guys.
So can't you get into the program?
Yeah, no, this is my formal application. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know if there's a conflict of interest.
Also think my biggest conflict
is
time.
Well, it's up to the board. You're in.
But you should definitely apply. Check the website for the next program
to apply.
You never know. I love that. You never know. That's true. Maybe this could be the beginning of my carpentry career.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Well, we've got some standard questions for you guys. What is your favorite part of LA?
I personally love things that bring people together, just in general, communities together around shared experiences. And so a couple of my favorite things that are somewhat LA specific are kind of the outdoor movie screenings. So whether it's a cemetery or a park. And because it's pretty much summer, 90% of the time here in Los Angeles, those are really fun. It's such a unique experience. And then Ciclovia, So when they shut down the subway redundancy cycle, so when they shut down like 6 to 10 miles of the Los Angeles streets, and it's only open to bikes and pedestrians and skateboarders, and you just see like all the range of flavors of Angelenos come out.
Yeah.
And that's a really fun thing. And I just like, I like the diversity of people and neighborhoods in LA.
Me too. I love all those. And I think for me, what really keeps me here is the sun. Like just...
So true.
I was an East Coaster and lived in D.C. for a while and grew up outside New York. And I feel like the sun is what brought me here and keeps me here.
Same here. Okay, what would you teach your younger self? Any advice you'd give to your younger self?
I got lots of advice for my younger
self. Well, why don't you start?
No, I don't even know where to start. Being more confident in your abilities and being trusting your gut and knowing that you probably have the right inclination or idea about something and just go with it.
Yep.
I love that.
For me, it's to take more risks. I think I was always the cautious risk taker, or maybe just didn't take enough risk, like starting abroad or traveling more or just staying in a job for too long because of the security of it. And I think that what I've learned from that and what I would tell my younger self is that your path, career path, personal path, whatever it is, it will rarely ever be linear and that it's going to take all kinds of turns and twists, and that's perfectly okay and it's to be expected.
Yeah, and that's a great lesson for entrepreneurs too. I feel like, you know, it's okay to deviate from the linear path and kind of do the unknown, and I think that's where like the magic happens.
Yep.
Pivot.
Yep.
So our last question for you guys is, what's next for Goodwin 10?
So we are wrapping up this season's programming and gearing up for 2019, so for our next slate of programming. So applications will open in the new year. And so keep an eye out for dates
programs?
On the websites for both programs.
Okay. All right. We're marking that in our calendars.
Still be running both programs
twice.
So we
expect to see your box service and your furniture company.
Exactly. We've got some time to work on it.
You can apply under a different name if you want.
Perfect.
Throw us off track. And then always continuing to find ways that we can engage the community through one-off programming, different types of events, other partnerships, and seeing how we can grow and expand here in LA and maybe beyond LA.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you for
having us.
It's been a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun.
This has been To Live in Law in LA, produced and edited by Jesse Lumen. If you like this episode, please consider leaving us a rating and comment on iTunes or sharing it on social media. If you have any questions, please email us at livelawla@nixonpeabody.com or visit livelawla.com to find out more. This podcast has been presented by Nixon Peabody LLP, but the content is meant simply for educational purposes, and accordingly, the views expressed do not reflect the views of Nixon Peabody and are not intended to provide or should be construed as legal advice. This podcast is not intended, nor does it create any lawyer-client relationship. Listeners should seek their own counsel and should not act in reliance on anything expressed by the presenters. To the extent this podcast may constitute attorney advertising under various state ethics rules, we note that any prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome.